Hello and welcome back to the show. Today we're talking about PCOS or polycystic ovary syndrome. And to help us navigate this tricky topic, we've enlisted the help of Dr. Felice Gersh, who's a medical doctor and a dual certified OBGYN. So let's dive in. Dr. Felice Gersh, we're so privileged to be with you today. We always love our interviews, and I know that you're a wealth of information. We're always blown away by you. I'm just remembering now, actually, last time we chatted to you, you were like, a lot of my friends, I like to knit, I like to read scientific journals. And so thanks for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me back.
So today we're going to talk about the topic of PCOS, polycystic ovary syndrome. And you've written books about this topic, PCOS, SOS, and I'm so glad to be doing this particular topic with you. So to start off with, what is PCOS and how does it normally present in women?
Well, PCOS is the most common endocrine disorder of reproductive aged women. And to define what it is, a group of doctors got together and they had a committee. And really, there's a little bit of arbitrariness in terms of how you define it. And there's been actually a little controversy. Right now, the definition officially is you need to have two of the following three. You need to have evidence of elevated levels of androgens. That's like the male type hormones, either by lab testing or by clinical manifestations. That would be like hirsutism, that's excessive facial hair or body hair, or alopecia, where you have thinning of the hair, sort of with a male pattern baldness, and sometimes sort of hormonal cystic acne. And then the other is some kind of irregular menstrual cycle. And then the third option, you need two out of three, would be ultrasound evidence of the tiny little cysts, the many, many cysts that would be around the rim of the ovary, which is what gave the name polycystic ovary syndrome. And so you need two of the three. Up until fairly recently, it required that it had to have the elevated androgens, either clinically or by lab testing. And now it actually doesn't. But many of us, including the Androgen PCOS Society, they really prefer to include the androgen excess because it's kind of a little bit of a different creature if you take that out of the picture. But basically, it has to have two of the three. And that's just the tip of the iceberg of what's really involved in this syndrome.
So what began your fascination, I suppose, with PCOS? I know it's, I think, the most common endocrine disorder in women. Is that correct? But I feel like not many people talk about it or know how to approach it. How did you get involved in this particular disorder?
Well, for me, it was actually quite personal. I actually have a type of it. Now, about 80% of women with PCOS have the overweight or obese version. And about 20%, they call it lean or really normal weight PCOS. And that was the category I was in. But I had to diagnose myself. That's how it became so personal. Back when I was in medical school, I was fighting acne, which is another, you know, one of the common manifestations. And 2 years went by. I didn't have a single menstrual cycle. And I went to one of the big honchos in the OBGYN department at my medical school. And I said, doctor, something is clearly wrong with me. And yeah, I would like you to help me because, and his response was, well, you're not planning on getting pregnant and women hate their periods anyway. So just go on birth control pills. And it just struck me like, that doesn't sound like it's telling me what's really going on with me. But at that time, I was obedient. I didn't know what else to do. So I went on the birth control pills because that's sort of the go-to for everything, still is. And I didn't actually like the way I felt. I had a lot of the nausea that sometimes people get. And it was a fairly high dose at that time. So I stuck with it for a while. And then I just gave up on it. And I started doing my own reading. And I just looked at everything. And I actually did my own in-depth research. And it really led me into the path of becoming an OBGYN, because that's how many doctors choose their specialty. Either a family member or themselves or some kind of event in their lives made it something really relevant. Sometimes it's a mentor, you know, in medical school. But for me, it was me. So I wanted to know what was wrong with me. And so it took me a while. And it was like light bulb went on in my head. It's like, I have PCOS. And I had to have fertility treatments for my first pregnancy. And then I had to figure out how to heal myself, because the only thing I was ever told or read was go on birth control pills. And I knew I didn't even feel good on them. And that led me down the road of what the heck are birth control pills anyway? And what are they doing in the female body? So in my practice, I saw over the years a much higher percentage of women coming in with all the manifestations of PCOS. Many of them had been to many doctors before me. And that's what really led me to want to write a book about it, because there seemed to be such a shortage of information, and doctors themselves were not really aware of what was going on. They didn't understand what it was. And so it became really one of my niches. And I really love helping women with PCOS because I can see such wonderful results. And so it's just really part of my life and my career now.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing. And that's wonderful that it's become your mission to help others and to teach them what you've learned mm-hmm. yourself. You brought up birth control pills. What is the problem with birth control pills for PCOS?
Well, for some women, birth control pills can certainly cover up some of the symptoms, but it never addresses the underlying problems of PCOS, which are quite complex. So it really, the way I think about it is I look at a wall and I say, well, that wall is full of mold and termites. But you know, that's really complex to fix a moldy wall. And what are you going to do? Rip the whole thing down. So I don't really want to deal with it. So maybe I'll sell the house and I won't disclose it or whatever. You know, like I'm just going to cover up the problem. So I just put on thick, really attractive wallpaper. But underneath that wallpaper is a wall festering with problems, mold, termites. And that's really what happens. And I'm seeing the results long term, because the doctors who start the patient on the birth control pills doesn't necessarily see them years later when they get off the birth control pills and they really do want to get pregnant. And suddenly their hormones are even worse than before they went on the pill. And of course, none of the problems have been addressed. Many women don't do very well on birth control pills. It doesn't solve even the symptoms for many women. And it actually is inappropriate, which I'll tell you, and we'll talk more about what PCOS means. But PCOS comes with certain inherent increased risk factors, like for blood clotting. So women are more prone to develop a blood clot that can lead to a blood clot in the leg that can actually travel to the lungs, and that can be even life-threatening. And most people know that birth control pills have on their warning, the package warning, that they can increase blood clots. So it makes no sense. And now there's been studies published that women who inherently have this increased risk of blood clots, PCOS women, have an even higher rate of blood clots when you put birth control pills into their system. And if you think about it, if you take women who are smokers, a woman who had a heart attack, or an elderly woman, like 60-something year old, we would never think of putting them on birth control pills. If they're so good for people, why wouldn't we give it? Because it actually increases many risk factors, like hypertension and even insulin resistance. And it does all kinds of things to the gut microbiome, which is another problem already in women with PCOS. And it alters so many different things. It increases depression and anxiety in many women when they go on birth control pills, and another inherent risk. So there are many things that women have who have PCOS, and birth control pills exaggerate and increase those risk factors. So it's really not an appropriate or even safe thing to do. And yet that is the standard of care these days. It's really shameful, really, that this is the way that women are being treated. And there's a little bit of progress, but not anywhere near what there should be. You know, that women end up being very, given the short stick in terms of research and attention, and when it's a woman-produced problem, you know, and especially in research, that's NIH, you know, the National Institutes of Health in the U.S., research for PCOS, the dollars are going down. Each year they've been going down, and we're advocating and lobbying for more money for research. And what little research money there is, it's only being spent on fertility, which is an important issue for women with PCOS, because they have it's the most common cause of infertility in women. But it goes so beyond that, and that all the other areas beyond infertility are totally being ignored in research. In the U.S., most of the data I find that I learned from and I see is in countries completely far away from the U.S. because PCOS is a worldwide epidemic, and there's more interest elsewhere than there is here in my home country.
Wow. So just as we zoom further down to PCOS, is it actually, because there's some misconceptions around it, would love for you to clear that up initially. Sure. So is it actually a reproductive issue? Is it an endocrine or hormonal issue, or is it all of the above?
That is the most perfect, you know, pointed, absolutely essential question to answer, because I consider PCOS to be the poster child of a medical condition that bridges all of those things. It actually is the link between reproductive problems and metabolic problems. And what I call the glue that keeps rhythm and beauty and functionality in a reproductive age woman, having her be fertile and feeling great and metabolically healthy. Because after all, you can't have a successful pregnancy if you have an unhealthy woman. So nature made it so that the two would be linked together. And it's the hormone that's made by the ovaries, the estrogen in the form of estradiol, that really is the glue that connects and keeps all together reproductive success and metabolic success. And in women with PCOS, they actually have, and this is so under-recognized, they have an estradiol deficiency. So they are deficient in this incredibly important hormone that keeps all the machinery of the body humming properly. It's a little bit like a taste of menopause. So in menopause, we know that estrogen is not produced anymore by the ovaries. And after women hit menopause, they have a host of metabolic problems that start to develop: hypertension, heart disease. Women start to get visceral fat. Like, you know, they lose their beautiful waistline and they say, what the heck is this muffin top? I'm doing everything right. They have rates, higher rates of depression and insomnia. And all of the things that you think of aging in a woman, that all those associations are happening in young women with PCOS. So I think of PCOS as really accelerated aging in a woman because of this deficiency. Now, it's not an absolute lack. It's a deficiency. And that's what we build upon, because we can do things to help improve the production of estradiol and the functionality of the receptors for estradiol. And with that, you know, nature gives you like little backdoor ways that you can go in to help maintain and restore health. So that's what I do. I utilize every tool in my toolbox to help women with PCOS to get back their lives. I mean, these are not old women. It's bad enough women have to go through menopause and all that delivers into their lives. Why should they have to live with metabolic dysfunction, fertility issues, and, you know, reproductive dysfunction when they're in their 20s? I mean, this is just criminal. When you think of a woman with PCOS, this is like a typical patient of mine. She wakes up in the morning, she goes into the bathroom and looks in the mirror. She sees she has to shave. She tries to do a comb over because her, you know, her hair is so thinning in the temples. She puts on heavy duty makeup to try to cover up the acne scars and the cystic acne. She has to wear stretch pants because nothing zips closed. You know, she wears like a big oversized shirt that covers, tries to cover her belly fat. And she's trying so hard to do everything right. And she has urges and cravings. And for reasons she can't, I mean, she gets self-loathing because she gets cravings to just do binge eating. This is very common. And they've actually done studies that giving estradiol to women who have binge eating disorders can actually help correct it. And so these are, but people blame them. They say, can't you just take care of this? Like, what are you doing? And they don't know what comes over them. And they feel depressed. They're not sleeping. There's high rates of sleep problems with sleep apnea and mood problems. And this is the life. And we're talking about women who are like 23, 26 years old. And they're at the peak of their lives when they're looking for often partners and starting careers. And we know that there's a lot of discrimination because we have an appearance crazed world, you know, and the first thing that people see is your face and your skin. So if you present yourself to the world with scars and cystic acne and, you know, 5 o'clock shadow and, you know, and hair, I mean, so it's so painful and it's so much emotional things that go into it. And it doesn't have to be this way. That's the thing. It just doesn't have to be. And birth control pills, for example, never cause weight loss. And it turns out that estrogen is critical for the creation of energy. So in every cell, the energy factory is called the mitochondria. And the mitochondria require estradiol in order to work properly. And when you have an estradiol deficiency, you basically have an energy deficiency. And if you can't create energy, it's because you can't burn fat. And then you end up accumulating fat in the visceral fat, which becomes very inflammatory. It gets invaded by white blood cells that produce a lot of inflammatory cytokines, all these, the production of these little inflammatory particles that go throughout the body and create really havoc. So women with PCOS have a real battle to lose weight, and putting them on birth control pills, some of them gain weight, but they certainly don't lose weight. So then they put all the women on metformin. And that has been shown to have minimal, if at all, you know, success with weight loss, and a lot of nausea, a lot of GI problems from it. And it doesn't cure anything. And now they're putting women who are pregnant on metformin. And there's data to show that metformin is actually an endocrine disruptor. It actually alters the proper function of hormone receptors. And so now there's data that shows that by age 4, a baby born of a woman with PCOS, because, you know, with help and luck, they can sometimes get pregnant. It's not a condition of sterility, it's infertility. And when they have a baby at age 4, that baby, compared to another baby of another woman matched with PCOS as well, the baby who was in the uterine environment that was exposed to metformin, they have more body fat at age 4. They already, the children are metabolically dysfunctional. So those children are more likely to have their own metabolic problems, obesity in childhood, and then their own fertility problems, emotional problems. So that is not the solution. And even though there's published data on the problems of metformin in pregnancy, that's still given. I mean, this is what is so frustrating for me as a doctor. We know that birth control pills are not really a solution. Sometimes they do help cover up some of the symptoms. Like you have irregular cycles. You're bleeding once every 3-4 months. So you go on birth control pills and suddenly you're bleeding every month. And they say this is common. I'm not sure you've heard this. The doctor says, we're regulating your periods or regulating your cycles. You're not regulating anything. What you're doing is shutting down the woman's own ovarian function and replacing it with something else that's not the real thing. So this is the way I look at it. You have like a beautiful little puppy, but this puppy just can't get house trained. And it's just creating havoc in the house. You know, it's doing its thing everywhere you go. So you don't know what to do. So you give it anesthesia. So you put the little puppy to sleep and then you get a little stuffed puppy. And like the stuffed puppy is just perfect and it kind of looks the same. That's not the real puppy. You didn't fix the puppy. You put the puppy to sleep and the puppy is still there. When the puppy wakes up, it's going to be just as bad or worse than it was when you put it to sleep. And that's what they do. They put the ovaries to sleep. They're not getting well. Nothing's happening that's good. You just give this pretend thing, like, you know, you're given a stuffy. It's called a birth control pill. It gives a pretend period. It's not really a period, means you ovulate. They're not ovulating. They're just causing the uterine lining to grow and bleed and grow and bleed. But you're not making the woman a fertile woman. And then eventually, if she wants to get pregnant, she goes off and she's as bad or worse off, often worse off, because the estrogen receptors in women with PCOS are not functioning properly. That's a double whammy. Their ovaries are not making estradiol as well, which is really why they initially start having too much testosterone. All estrogen in the ovary comes from testosterone. In one group of cells in the ovary, testosterone is made, and then an enzyme called aromatase converts testosterone into estradiol. It's amazing. But in women with PCOS, the aromatase doesn't work as well as it should. It works, but just not as well as it should. So you have like an assembly line where you have like a little backup. So you have too much testosterone accumulating and not enough being converted into estradiol. So the brain says, hey, where's my estradiol? Make more. So it sends out the signal to the ovary to make more testosterone as the precursor to estradiol. And that's the LH, the luteinizing hormone, which is so classically elevated in women with PCOS. And so the ovary makes more testosterone. It's doing exactly as it's told, but it can't convert it properly to estradiol. So you have too much testosterone, not enough estradiol. And then to make it worse, because now we know of endocrine disruptors that are exposed to the woman when she's a baby or in utero, the receptors for estrogen don't develop properly because BPA is the one that's been the most studied. BPA is bisphenol A. It's present in everyone, unfortunately. Like when they did studies, they find almost like 100% of people have this particular plastic. It's what makes hard plastics. It's in cash register receipts, the lining of cans. It's what we call ubiquitous. It's everywhere. And in utero, what they used to say is, well, when they would measure the levels of BPA in the serum of moms, they said, well, these levels are not high enough to cause damage. Well, the reality is that what they recently found out is that it concentrates in the fetus. Can you imagine that? So the levels in the mother are a fraction of what the levels are in the developing baby. And this causes the receptors to not develop properly. This is what we call an endocrine disruptor. So now we have women with PCOS who have estrogen receptors that are like sluggish. You know, most people know about insulin resistance in type 2 diabetes. Well, this is estrogen receptor resistance. So, and then the body doesn't make more estrogen to make up for it because the ovaries are not able to cooperate. So essentially, women with PCOS live a life of estrogen deficiency. It's really that straightforward. And once you really understand the critical role that estrogen plays in every single organ in the body, there are estrogen receptors in every organ. If you name one organ, I can tell you all the stuff that estrogen does in that organ. And it's on purpose that nature did that so that one hormone can coordinate and maintain the function of reproduction and of all of metabolism. And metabolism is the production, storage, distribution of energy. So once you know that, you understand the foundation of what underlies women with PCOS, that they're not able to burn fat well, they don't create energy well. And because of that, organs are not working optimally. Without estrogen, you are more prone to lining of arteries being unhealthy, hypertension, all the things that you associate with aging. Women with PCOS are more prone to joint pain, like osteoarthritis even, and you know all the mood things that we talked about. So what can we do? Well, first we need to understand that on top of all of that, estrogen is critical for maintaining the gut. And I'm sure you talk about that all the time, the critical importance of the gut microbiome. So it was about 3 years ago that the first study was published out of China. And there was a hypothesis by my friend, Dr. Kelton Tremelin, who is an Australian. He's in Adelaide. And he put forth a hypothesis about the gut microbiome, that it would be dysbiotic, would be abnormal in women with PCOS. And I kept asking him, I kept, Kelton, when are you going to prove your hypothesis? And he said, I can't get anybody to want to support the research. And because there's just not enough interest. Well, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, this epidemic exists in China too. And there they got the funding. So they actually published the first paper that showed that women with PCOS have a dysbiotic gut microbiome and leaky gut. And it's really changed a lot of, well, for people who are reading it, and it's starting to grow. And this is what's helping to transform the understanding, because birth control pills themselves create an abnormal gut microbiome and leaky gut. So that obviously just emphasizes how this is not making sense as a treatment. But once you understand that there's this problem, then we can start solving it by looking at timed eating, what we call time-restricted eating, that can help to reform the gut microbiome, different forms of fasting and different types of therapies and targeted supplements and fiber to nurture the gut microbiome. So now we can even look at using things like soy, organic soy, which is a phytoestrogen, has actually been found when it's in its whole organic state, as opposed to processed soy, which is a totally different animal, right? We don't want to eat that, but it actually is a fertility food because it helps, because it can bind to the estrogen receptors in the gut and help to make up for that lack of enough estrogen to help restore gut integrity and the microbiome and so on to help it to heal. So we have all these now natural tools now that we're getting actual data to support. A hypothesis is great, but it's really nice when you prove it. And that's what's happened now. And now there's actually been studies that have come out and shown, and these are small studies because, once again, funding is limited, studies that show that women with PCOS do indeed have estrogen receptor dysfunction, that their hormones for estrogen are not working properly. They're like less receptive. And also that women with PCOS essentially are living a life of jet lag, because estrogen is key to maintaining the master clock in the brain that maintains the timing of everything. So everything in the body we now know is working in synchrony according to the 24-hour rotation of Earth. We are totally timed. And they actually have now clocks, but you can see, you can Google them, where it shows at this time of the day, this is what tends to happen. And this time, this hormone comes out, and this goes up, and this goes down. And at night, you know, there's a totally different type of immune system functioning. So all kinds of things are different depending on the time of the day. And we now know that when people live like a life of, we'll call it like a jet lag, because they're flying across time zones all the time, they have higher rates of depression, anxiety, obesity, insomnia, even many cancers. And now we know that that is, in fact, the life of women with PCOS. They're always living a sense of a time jet lag. And this creates metabolic dysfunction, because the organs are like the master clock in the brain is like the conductor. And instead of conducting, it actually is drunk. And so all the organs are working a little bit off, like you have an orchestra where some are playing one measure and others playing a different note. And so instead of having a beautiful symphony, you have noise. And that's why if you work on that and you understand that, there's the back door. The back door is through timed eating, because the cells in the body have their own clocks. And the gut microbiome, they're living cells, microbes. They also have clocks, and they don't know if it's night or day. They don't know if it's light or dark. They actually become functional based on the time of eating. And in the United States, it became very common, and people were told that they should be grazing, like eat a little bit all the time. It turns out that's the worst advice possible for most people, and especially women with PCOS, because then their body don't, their microbiome don't know what time it is. If you eat a big breakfast, and there was a wonderful study out of Israel where they ate 2/3 of their calories for breakfast, 1/3 for a late lunch, and that was it for the day. In no time at all, they were ovulating regularly. Their estrogen was better. Their testosterone and their insulin levels fell by 50%. That is phenomenal. There's no drug that lowers that. And remember, you can't lose weight when you have high insulin. Insulin is a big problem for women with PCOS because they have a lot of inflammation from the excessive fat tissue. In fact, even women who are thin with PCOS have been shown to have excessive amounts of belly fat. Even in thin women, it's like hiding in there, and it creates inflammation. And the gut, when it has the wrong bacteria, creates inflammation as the particles come out from the bad bacteria. They call it endotoxin or lipopolysaccharides. And the immune system that lines the gut produces those inflammatory particles called cytokines. And it creates this whole systemic, the whole body becomes inflamed. Inflammation drives insulin resistance. And that creates like a pre-diabetes or even diabetes situation. In fact, women with PCOS have like 7 times the incidence of diabetes. It's because they have all this inflammation. They're insulin resistant. And estrogen is key for the process of glucose transport into cells. So on top of that, it's like so complicated. Their cells don't get enough glucose, because without enough estrogen, they don't have that proper transport. So now you have high levels of insulin. Insulin drives the production and storage of fat. You can't lose weight when you have chronically high insulin. But when you eat a big breakfast, which is the time of day when you're most insulin sensitive, your body is most designed to eat food in the morning. And so if you put most of your food into the morning, and then you have this giant fast from like 3 o'clock in the afternoon until the next day breakfast, and a lot of people mess that up and they fast until like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That's like, you can't do it more wrongly than that. So, but when you actually have a big giant breakfast, and then you have the late lunch, and then you have this big fast, which most people won't do. But, you know, you can, there's compromises that you can make. It's not all or nothing. That's just the top of the line, like the elite that could do that. But when that happens in the study, you know, insulin levels plummeted. That's the ticket to losing weight, getting metabolic homeostasis, or getting things back in order. So there, we have these wonderful tools. They're not magic in a pill. There is no magic pill. That said, I would like to have some research developed that looks at giving women with PCOS, especially if they don't quickly respond to some of the lifestyle measures and the supplements, to actually give them some bioidentical estrogen and that, and progesterone as well. And in some women, I have given some small doses of estrogen who have binge eating disorder, and I've seen some tremendous benefits. So we need so much more research, but there is so much hope. And, you know, it is a very complicated condition. I think that's part of the reason why doctors don't diagnose it, maybe, or they just diagnose it and then they just quickly to put them on birth control pills and metformin and send them out the door. Sometimes they add in spironolactone, which has its own set of issues, but they don't address the underlying situation, because you can see it's complex and it's not a simple solution. And it involves a lot of teamwork and cooperation, but they underestimate the women and what they can do, you know. And I've seen it over and over, like, I'm not going to talk about lifestyle. Nobody ever changes. Nobody ever does anything. That is not true. It's so frustrating to think that doctors, so many doctors think the only solution is you have to give them some prescription pharmaceuticals, when, because they underestimate the motivation of women with PCOS, what they're willing to do to get better. Because I have seen women lose 60 pounds and keep it off, look gorgeous, their skin clear up, their gut problems clear up. I have seen this over and over. So that's the thing. It's complex. And when women hear about it, it seems so depressing. It's like, all this is going wrong in my body. It's like every organ is affected. But the solution is that you don't have to work on every organ. It will self-repair when you get the basics back in order. And the results are amazing. And they become fertile. And they feel good. And it's a beautiful ending. But it won't happen if you don't have a beginning. And that's why I'm so thrilled to have this opportunity to speak with you and speak to your audience, so that all the women get the message. Yes, it's complex and it looks gloomy at first, but there is so much light at the end of the tunnel, and there is so much hope and so much success.
Oh my gosh, Felice, you're just amazing. You have once again exceeded my wildest hopes and dreams of what this interview could be. Thank you for opening up this conversation and offering such a beautiful message of hope to all these women that are struggling with PCOS. Last time we interviewed, you talked to me about how back in the day, PCOS was actually more of an advantage than a disadvantage. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yes. So this is what we think. That it's built into a small group of women, maybe not even that small, because we know that it's really growing in terms of the pathological version of PCOS. But there is what I'll say an advantageous, as you said, version of PCOS. So if you have a very mild built-in genetic disorder, so that the enzyme aromatase is just a little bit less functional than, say, an average woman. So what happens is, she makes estrogen, okay, but maybe just a little bit less, but not very much, not enough to really have a huge impact. And she has a little bit extra testosterone, because it goes down the assembly line and you build up a little testosterone and then you have a little bit less estrogen, but it's not a huge deal. But that little bit of extra testosterone, we now know, gives women that little extra ambition and power and, you know, more direct and forceful. So we think that women with PCOS were the leaders of their tribes. They've done studies and they found that the mild, we'll call it the normal, healthy, mild version of PCOS, is found in many women who have won Olympic gold medals. So they're a little bit more powerful. Maybe they're a little bit braver and they're not meek. They're just really dynamic, powerful women. So I love to let women know that your heritage, your great, 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 going back grandmother, was the leader of her tribe. These were the women that everyone looked up to, the decisive women, they were like really the rulers of their group. And that's what you can be. That's in every woman with PCOS, is that they can be dynamic. They can be everything that they ever wanted to be. All they need to understand is that the current modern society, with all the chemicals, the endocrine disruptors, the Western diet, and there's so much written about the Western diet, how it has created dysbiotic gut microbiomes in anybody, you know, it's just that, so the whole world is affected by the traditional Western or SAD, you know, standard American diet, you know, that is so full of processed food and lacks nutrients. But when you have women with PCOS who already have this problem with estrogen deficiency, and their gut is already having problems with having the right microbiome even before, because their estrogen is even less, then, you know, you just have it like everything's on steroids, all the problems. But when you know that nature made it so that this slight little defect, you know, just a slight thing that causes a little bit extra testosterone, but there was not, and they were not infertile women. They might have been slightly less fertile. So that's another advantage. Maybe instead of having 8 children, they had 4. But guess what? That gave them a survival advantage, because pregnancy and delivering a baby was a risky business for a woman. Mm-hmm. Some women didn't make it. And they then used up all their nutrients in their body. They gave up all their iron and their calcium to, because the baby takes what it needs. So it was harder on the women to raise all those children. So they had like a little bit of built-in birth control, which was good. So their children were more likely to survive, and they were more likely to survive. So there were really intrinsic advantages to having PCOS. And that's why it didn't get lost. You know, it didn't disappear. You know, anything that's that bad probably would not persist in the community, right? It would, like, they would die off. They would not pass on those good genes. So if you twist it around, you know, it's like reframing, you know, how you can reframe how you look at things. So instead of looking at PCOS as this dreaded condition, this most horrible condition of women, you reframe it as, you were born with the best. You were born to be a leader. You were born to be a star. Now, all you have to do is get back to your roots, get rid of that standard American diet, that Western diet, you know, start living to the normal circadian rhythm. You know, make sure you go to bed at the right time, get good sleep in a dark, cool room, that you eat according to the way nature intended you to, which is having a big breakfast. Don't snack. Stop eating early in the evening. Exercise in the morning to lose weight. You know, that there are so many things we can do, and then take targeted nutrients, supplements, eat a healthy, wonderful plant-based diet with loads of fiber to nurture your gut microbiome, that you can turn the clock back and you can be that superstar woman that's inside of you waiting to come out.
Amazing.
Wow. I can fully tell why you've given up knitting, and you just think peer reviewed papers are so much cooler. It's slightly coming across.
Only
a little bit.
If you want a scarf, I'll make you one. You can put on your Christmas tree.
Yeah.
<I'll> make it clean.
I love your passion around this, you know, the foundations of health and really targeting this from the root, you know, the root cause versus just a cover-up band-aid treatment that is so common that that's all women have as options. So what are perhaps some case studies, you know, that specifically you had some really strong results looking just at natural, you know, complementary treatments that women could, you know, start with and try from their own home, and maybe just a story around that, perhaps, of someone that you just did the basics, what you've just explained, and had really good results with.
Well, as soon as I knew you were going to ask me, but I couldn't think of anyone but Lori, who I changed her name because I can't give any of the details. But she came to me. She had just finished getting her master's degree, and she was planning on getting a job, her dream job. She got an interview for. And she was one of those people like I described. She got up in the morning. It was the day of her interview. She hadn't had a period in 3 months, and there she was bleeding. It's like, I can't believe this is happening. And she had already put her clothes on, and it's like, oh my gosh, I was so unprepared. Like, they have no idea when they're going to bleed. There's like no preparation. So she had to quickly change out of all her clothes. And that was the outfit she wanted to wear. So she put on something else, and she didn't really feel good in it. And, you know, she did the same routine I described. I mean, she put on all this heavy duty makeup to cover her skin, which, and she, you know, tried to make her hair look better. and she had cramps. She developed irritable bowel syndrome, and she was feeling so depressed. You know, it just was not a good day. And so she didn't get the job. And so, you know, she talked to her mom and she was just so depressed. She's like, I don't know what the purpose of life is. I can't lose weight. She was about 65 pounds overweight. And she just was so unhappy. You know, she'd been to so many dermatologists. She'd been on antibiotics and every topical. She had the deep cystic acne. And, you know, they said, well, you could go on Accutane. And she didn't really want to because they told her, well, it might make you depressed and suicidal. And she was already depressed and it could cause irritable bowel syndrome. And she already had that. So it's like, how can I take this drug? And then they also said it doesn't work 2/3 of the time in women like you. It's like, well, this is not very promising sounding. And so her mom found me. And so the two of them came in and we had a talk about what she could do, what she was willing to do. And she was so motivated. I couldn't ask for a more dream patient. She, even though she was depressed and discouraged, she said, I'll give this a try. So she followed my plan exactly. And I can't say everyone is quite as good. But, you know, I always say, you know, when people try to stop smoking, they usually try and fail about 7 times before they're successful. And that's the successful people. So I always say, you know what? If you take 2 steps forward and then you take even 2 or 3 steps backward, that's okay. You're still in the game. You know, but this, my patient, Lori, she hardly took a step backwards. She just forged ahead. So we created, because she decided this and she was agreeable, we created the giant breakfast salad. So in this salad went every kind of vegetable and nuts and seeds, flax seeds, which are so good. And she put in sometimes like little cubes of like the hard type, the firm type of tofu. And she would put in beans and like lentils that she'd make like lentil salad and sometimes like quinoa. So it was not the same salad every day, but it had a whole host of things in it. And I told her, make it the size of a serving bowl salad. I mean, just make it so big that you can't even finish it. So probably most people know because they've had this experience. You got an apple that is so big and it was so good. But after a while, you just can't like eat any more apple, like you're appled out. It's like, this apple is too big. And that's how I want it to be. So she had these giant salads. And for the first time in a long time, she actually left a little bit of food over. I said, you know, you could save it. But, you know, that's a good thing that you don't have to clean every plate, right? And you can't overdose on vegetables. I mean, have you ever heard of anyone hospitalized because they ate, you know, too many vegetables? It's not happening. And after a while, when you eat nuts and seeds, it really changes your appetite. When you eat a big breakfast, and they have studies on this, it doesn't take that long, but it's variable from person to person. For some, it could take a month. For some, it could take 3-4 months. But after a while, you really get hungry in the morning, because a lot of people say, I'm not hungry in the morning. That's a real sign that you have circadian rhythm dysfunction. You're messed up. That's the problem. But even if you're not hungry, if you force yourself, after a while, your body will transform. Your appetite centers in your brain and everything with it will transform, and you'll get more aligned with the circadian rhythm that you're supposed to be. And what happens is when you eat this giant breakfast, you're not hungry for many hours afterwards. And then you can have like, you get hungry maybe around 5 o'clock, 4 o'clock. And because I can't really expect people to stop eating at 3, maybe a few people will do that for a little while, but you know, I'm realistic, but most people can have an earlier dinner. And they're not even that hungry. And what happens over time is that when you do this and you really stick with it, you actually lose your appetite at night. In fact, it could almost be like a little bit of a food aversion, which is what nature intended, because nature doesn't want you to eat at night. And you just like don't want to do it. It's like, no, I don't want it, you know? And if you have to eat something like sweet, have it for breakfast, dessert for breakfast. So say, you know, you really love having, you know, because I always put everyone organic, dairy-free, gluten-free, but you know, you can make anything that tastes delicious that's dairy and gluten-free. Like say you like a little bit of a chocolate brownie that you make with like black beans and organic cocoa or something like that. And you want a little, you know, a little piece, have it with breakfast. That's when you're going to keep your insulin down the most. So on this regimen, Lori did amazing. Her appetite completely controlled. And then after about 2 months, I added in fasting. So we added in fasting and she was really good about that. I happen to use the fasting mimicking diet, But alternatives would be like alternate day fasting or the 5-2 or the modified alternate day fasting or 5-2. There are pluses and minuses with all of them. What you need to do is what people will do, right? Because it doesn't matter how good something is if it's not done, right? We always know that. So you have to see what a patient will do. And she was good at doing actually a variety of these things. And so we incorporated fasting. And over the course of a year, she lost about 50 pounds. And then over the next 3 months, she lost another 15. So she lost that full 65. She actually posted on Facebook because she felt so good, like a before and after picture. You know how people do that, you know? So she actually made it public record. She actually put her picture, and the picture, the after picture was so gorgeous. And she did a few things. We did PRP for her skin to help with the acne cleared up. You know, I gave some supplements and, you know, vitamin A and zinc, and we get the skin cleared up as her gut dysbiosis cleared up, because it's very, very related. You know, the skin is really a reflection of inner inflammation. And when we did tests on her, her inflammation markers were through the roof, but they came all down, and she was insulin resistant. That cleared up, all those things. So it's not that this isn't repairable. That was so amazing. And she worked so hard. She wanted to go into a career that required her to meet a certain weight. And she could not have done that. I mean, there was like no way. And she was able to meet that weight requirement. And so she got in. And, you know, I've known her now for about 5 years. And so now she is engaged. I mean, it's just so amazing. And her career has taken off. She's another person. She's kept the weight off. She has perfectly regular cycles. And, you know, they're planning to have kids. She was not going to have any fertility problems. She is gorgeous. She's like a normal woman. And, you know, she found her niche in terms of the breakfast salad. Now, some people may like the breakfast stir fry. You know, it's not like everyone has to have the breakfast salad, but, you know, find the type of food that you love, because the goal is to eat tons of vegetables. The polyphenols, the antioxidants, the fiber is like gold to women with PCOS. What is harmful is eating all the processed foods, you know, the processed carbs. So when people say, oh, PCOS women should be on a low carb diet, I say, no way. They need to be on a low processed food carb diet. They need to have a high fiber diet. So it's important to know that starches are what fiber is. So don't, you know, it's like fat. There's good fat, there's bad fat. There's good carbs, there's bad carbs. It shouldn't be that. It's only because of processed food that we have these distinctions, right? Otherwise, it wouldn't be that way. And even animals, which I keep people off of to a large degree in the beginning, and then I follow the diet that's, you know, sustainable for the planet, which is to limit animal protein to 3 ounces a day, because our planet can't support all those animals and all of us people. You know, there's not room for us all. So, you know, and the methane and the pollution. So we can't, and this confined feedlot animals, you know, it's like they won't even let cameras on site at those places anymore because they're so gross. And in the U.S., that's what most of the animal is. You know, they don't have free range or, you know, pastured, or, you know, it's not what most of it is. And it's not going to feed the masses. There isn't enough land for that, for all the people. So, you know, I say limit to 3 ounces of animal a day. But for PCOS women, I try to help them to avoid that altogether for 3 to 6 months, because we now know that when you have the wrong gut microbiome, the animal protein is transformed into carcinogens and toxic products. So it's really best to try to avoid it or limit it. You know, I'm always willing to compromise, because I can't expect everyone to do everything, you know? And I know there are some doctors that say it's my way or no way, you know, it's like everything or nothing. And I say it's never all or nothing, because I meet them where they'll go. And sometimes it's hard to get people to do as much as I'd like. Lori was not one of those, but it's amazing how over time, you know, people get back on. If they fall off, they get back on. And I find such unbelievable success rates with this. And when you think about it, it's really kind of easy. You know, it's like you have to do things that are so obvious. You know, I say, why do I have to tell people this? It sounds so obvious. It's just that people aren't doing it. Like, go to bed when you're supposed to, exercise when you're supposed to, you know, stop eating poisonous, you know, processed food, you know, don't use chemicals on your skin, you know, have purpose and love in your life. And then, you know, so work on relationships, you know, and not on possessions. because relationships are what drive people to have happiness, right? That's why we worry about being separated. You know, people need people. So find purpose in life, work, find your mind-body type of procedure. Like we do biofeedback with guided imagery, meditation. It's not one size fits all, but women with PCOS always have to have some sort of mind-body medicine because they do have higher sympathetic tone. Their autonomic nervous system is sort of in the stress response. And that's partly because of their insulin resistance, their sleep deprivation, their estrogen deficiency. It all comes together to make them like more stressed out people. And so mind-body medicine really helps with the gut. We know there's such a huge gut-brain connection, and stress feeds gut problems. So every woman with PCOS, of course, this is why I love to say PCOS is the poster child for how reproductive functions and metabolic functions are linked. You don't have to be a woman with PCOS to really see that everything I say applies to everyone. It's just that all of it comes together with sort of like the ultimate problem list in women with PCOS. But everything that affects women with PCOS is affecting everyone. So all the lessons learned from PCOS are the lessons for everyone. It's just that everything is that much more exaggerated in women with PCOS because of all the things that they have to deal with. But in effect, the problems with the gut, with stress, with sleep problems, circadian rhythm problems, they're universal now across every continent. So the idea that you eat a big breakfast and that you stop snacking and that you go to bed at the right time, you eat, you know, real food, you have lots of plants, you stop eating tons of animal, this applies to everyone. And that's why you don't, it's really, I like it as sort of the example. You know how this is just an example of how when things go wrong, this is what you get, you know, this is like wrong on steroids, right? But it's really, the story is for everyone. We all have a part of PCOS in us.
As we just wrap up, I'd be very curious as to some of these targeted supplement regimes that you use or sure. types of herbs with people that are suffering PCOS.
Or how you get that estradiol up and also maybe aromatase functioning better, if you could speak to all of that.
Sure. Well, I'll start with some of the supplements. So sort of the replacement for metformin is berberine. So berberine is an alkaloid extract from certain plants. And there's been quite a bit published on berberine. It acts as an antimicrobial, so it kills off bad bacteria in the gut, and it also improves glucose transport, so it helps to get the glucose out of the blood and into the cells that need it so that they can create energy, and you don't have that high level of glucose that's going to raise your insulin. When you have, the body responds to high glucose by making more insulin, and that drives all the problems. It's really like a terrible like downward spiral. So berberine is very helpful. I don't give it forever. So this would be what I call green medicine. So it's not forever. It's for maybe a few months. And then you don't need it anymore. That's the beauty of it. So it's like, so green medicine replaces the big pharma medicine. And it's more natural. It has far fewer side effects. But it's not for life. Now, another very, very helpful supplement is myo-inositol. And it's interesting, inositol is used by some psychiatrists, the integrative psychiatrists, for anxiety. And we now know, as I mentioned, though, there's this big link between the gut and the brain. And it turns out that it does help all of the above. And there are tremendous now research articles, which I love that there's some people in the world, not so much in the US again, that have done research with myo-inositol and showed that it really helps reduce inflammation in the ovary. Now, this is the beauty. You meant this link to how you make more estrogen. So part of the thing that happens is when they have inflammation in the ovary, and they've actually done studies where they've actually extracted follicular fluid. That's the fluid around the egg in the area, in the little cysts that form that are so prevalent in women with PCOS. When they pull out the fluid, they find it's filled with white blood cells, the leukocytes. It's inflamed fluid. And that is going to suppress the way the ovary is functioning. So when you add myo-inositol, it seems to help rejuvenate the ovary. And then it does make more estrogen and you ovulate. So myo-inositol can help restore ovulation. Along with that can be melatonin. Now, there's some data that suggests that women with PCOS not only have receptor problems for estrogen, but also for melatonin. No one says it's only one thing, right? So there's also a problem with melatonin that it doesn't work properly. And if you give more melatonin, it can help override the resistance to the melatonin receptors. And there are receptors for melatonin on the ovaries. And that's one reason why sleep is so important. And women who don't sleep, or women who work like the night shift and everything is messed up with their circadian rhythm, they have a lot of irregular cycles and infertility. So small doses, and I mean small doses of melatonin, often you can give even a half a milligram a couple of hours before bedtime, and that will promote your natural melatonin. And then sleeping in the dark. So I always sleep, for example, with a sleep mask. So I say, you know, you need even a little bit of light filtering through the eyelids can suppress melatonin production, especially in PCOS women. So we have those supplements. Another one, it's a polyphenol called quercetin. And quercetin has been shown to be also very beneficial in their published articles for PCOS. And one of my favorites is N-acetylcysteine, NAC. And that is a precursor to glutathione, the master detoxifier and antioxidant of the body. But NAC has other functions. It helps to heal the liver. Women with PCOS have high rates of fatty liver. And this helps. This helps to heal the liver. And as well, it helps with glucose transport. So it helps to get the glucose down, lowering the insulin, once again, enabling the potential for losing weight and stopping the testosterone production. So I didn't mention that when you have high levels of insulin, it drives up another hormone called IGF-1, insulin-like growth factor 1, which actually has receptors on the ovary. And then that actually drives up the production of testosterone. So that's why it's like fuel to the fire. So you have the increased production of testosterone because of the malfunctioning of the enzyme aromatase. So you don't have the conversion into estrogen well. But then on top of that, you have the high insulin, the high IGF-1, which then stimulates even more testosterone. So if you can get the insulin down, you get the IGF-1 down, and that will slow the amount of testosterone production. And when you have high levels of testosterone, that also feeds more inflammation. It's just like a never-ending cycle of more and more inflammation. And the more inflammation, it drives everything even that much worse. So by getting, you know, the gut better with berberine, of course, all the other lifestyle things, but berberine helps get the gut better. We have myo-inositol helping the ovary and the brain to feel better. We have NAC helping regulate blood sugar and helping also restore ovulation, helping the liver to work better, helping the body to detoxify, because women with PCOS tend to have reduced ability to detoxify. So they tend to, and they have studies on this, that if you measure like a group of women, women with PCOS will have higher levels of BPA. They can't seem to get rid of it as well. And when I've done some tests, this has totally not been published, but in my own practice, I find that they have higher rates of MTHFR, the double T. So they're not as good at methylation as the average woman, and they tend to bioaccumulate more endocrine disruptors, these toxins. So that's NAC, which is the precursor to glutathione, I believe helps them to get rid of these toxins more readily. And by the way, fasting has been shown to help with detoxification as well, including the phase two, which doesn't get talked about so much. Phase one and phase two detoxification is in the small intestine. And that actually has been helped by doing fasting regimens. And I think by lowering the toxic load in the women with PCOS, their livers work better, everything works better. So that's also so important. And we know that when you get less dysbiotic gut, you have less toxins going to the liver and you have the proper short-chain fatty acids, the metabolic fermentation products of the fiber that actually serve to regulate liver function and brain function. So we get all of that together. So those are some of my favorite supplements. And of course, you can't leave out things like omega-3 and vitamin D. They've shown really low levels of vitamin D in virtually all women with PCOS. A lot of it's because the vitamin D gets sequestered in fat tissue. But vitamin D is so important for women with PCOS. And then you can add in other things like CoQ10. CoQ10 is like the lighter fluid, you know, to get the mitochondria to burn fat. And so CoQ10 can be beneficial. And then, of course, you can do any other kinds of herbals if they need for sleep or stress or energy. But, you know, the green medicine, the herbals, like if they have like afternoon fatigue, you can give some rhodiola. If they can't sleep well at night, you can give some ashwagandha, you know. So one of my favorite things that I learned in the integrative fellowship I took was a lot of herbal medicine, so that I feel so comfortable, you know, giving various herbals to help with all of these things. And for glucose regulation, you know, you can give a little bit of chromium and cinnamon, and there's new published articles on cinnamon to help lower glucose. So all of this can really go together for gut. I mean, ginger, and I try to use a lot of teas because tea doesn't feel like medicine, and there's a limit to how many pills people can swallow. So that's really good. And magnesium, I can't leave off magnesium. Magnesium has over 600 functions. I used to say 300. Now we know it's over 600 functions in the body, including stress and sleep, anxiety, and glucose regulation. I mean, you can't make neurotransmitters properly without magnesium. So, and that's been shown. You can't make serotonin. And that's another thing, sunlight. So I talk about sunlight is medicine. A lot of people never leave their room, so to speak. You know, they're just in and out of buildings and they don't see the light of day. And we now know that sunlight actually hits special receptors in the retina of the eye that go to the brain to trigger the serotonin production from the serotonin neurons. And serotonin is the precursor to melatonin. So when you get out and you get sunlight, it actually makes you feel happier and calmer. And then at night, you'll make melatonin and you'll sleep better. So it's amazing how, you know, when you live with nature, and in fact, we know that when you see trees, you actually calm yourself, right? So you, you know, need to have nature and sun and all of these things. And they're as important as any supplement I can come up with, but we put it together. You know, it's the whole. So you can't just pick one supplement. That's why you can't treat PCOS by giving, you know, a handful of supplements. It's that's why they use the word supplement, right? It's supplementary to everything else you're doing. And I try not to overwhelm with, you know, too many pills and supplements, because you can see where this can go. I left off like curcumin. I mean, how could you not think of curcumin, right? The most anti-inflammatory herbal. But, you know, that's why I use a lot of teas, like holy basil is great. Even chamomile, ginger teas. There's so many rooibos tea. There's so many teas that have medicinal properties, but they don't feel like they're medicine, you know? So I say every afternoon, sit down, have a lovely cup of tea. And if you feel you have to have a snack, which most people after a while don't, have a snack that has only fat in it, predominantly fat, so it won't raise your insulin. So like just a few olives. And so I'm a big olive fan. And I hope people can acquire a taste if they say they hate olives, but they come in different flavors and different colors. But if you, in the beginning, if you feel you have to have a snack, if you have just a few olives, you will not raise your blood sugar. That means it will have almost no impact, and you get the pleasure of eating, and then you have your nice herbal tea. And of course, we have a lot of data on green tea, right? So, and if you don't like green tea, I really talk about green tea a lot because it has so many properties that are so beneficial, but I personally just don't like the taste. Somehow it tastes like drinking dirt to me. I wish it didn't, I didn't have to say that, but other people love it. But a close cousin is oolong tea. So if you don't, there's always, we always have an alternative pathway. So for people like me who forever, whatever reason, it's like cilantro, you know, you either love it or you don't. What can you say about cilantro? But like for green tea, if you think like me and you just don't really like it that much, try oolong tea. I love oolong tea. It's almost as good, has almost as many antioxidants and the same benefits. It's almost the same. So it's like one half a step different. So that's fine. Just have another half a cup more, right? So just, you know, there's always a substitute for something. If you don't like it, we'll find an alternative. But, you know, like, and also like for vegetables, when people like stick out their tongue every time I mention a vegetable, you've probably seen that too, you know? Then there's always to cook it, you know, it's like for kids, you know, you hide it in tomato sauce or whatever you have to do, you know, you roast them. I'd say like, if you don't like root vegetables, which I love, then what you do is you cover them with pumpkin pie spice and you roast them. And then everything tastes like pumpkin pie, you know, so, and it's good because that all that cinnamon in it, right? Pumpkin pie, nutmeg, cinnamon, cardamom, all good stuff, right? So, you know, we can work around, do workarounds, but everything has a workaround. If you don't like one thing, we'll find another.
Wonderful. Thank you, Felice, the encyclopedia of supplements and herbs, pretty much. Before we go, I did just want to ask, you mentioned at the start of the call about giving your patients estrogen. Is that right?
Well, it's one of those catch-22s. We know, as I said, that there are estrogen receptors on every organ system in the body. And so sometimes to heal, you need to have the hormone. It would be like trying to heal people and they don't have a thyroid gland, you know. So you sometimes have to give some estrogen when they're just not making much estrogen. Now, they're not like totally not making estrogen, but it's just not enough because you need estrogen in order to maintain a healthy blood vessels and a healthy gut. And if like just focus on the gut. We know that women in menopause, because I deal with that a lot too, they have a completely different gut microbiome after they lose their estrogen production from their ovaries. And in that case, you know, we have different options. One is to give hormone replacement. Well, women with PCOS make some estrogen from their ovaries, but it varies. Some women, you know, PCOS is a syndrome. So it comes in all different spectrums, right? So there's the severe and then there's the mild. So it's not exactly the same for everyone. I've seen the most mild cases. They're so simple to deal with, and others that they hardly make any estrogen. And so for those women where we just can't heal them without any estrogen, if you give them some estrogen, and like for me, if they have, most of these women will have some problems with, you know, cravings or binge eating. And since we have published data on binge eating, I can use that as a justification because we have limited to no published data on giving estrogen to women with PCOS, but we do have for binge eating disorder, which they usually have at that point. And I can do something as simple as give them an estrogen patch, and that extra estrogen will help them to heal. So it's like, it's only a short-term thing. It's not forever, but it's one of those things you give hormones to help them heal, and then they heal, and then they make their own hormones. You don't need in proper amounts, and then you don't need to give it as much. And there's some suggestion that for women who are really making very, very little, and we can measure that, that we can give more higher levels of bioidentical hormones. And when you think of it this way, the traditional approach is to give birth control pills. So birth control pills have in them the estrogen, which is never found in a human, called ethanol estradiol, and some form of progestin, and they vary depending on the birth control pill. So why is it that it's okay to give women these non-human forms of hormones that have a lot of adverse effects and, you know, like a whole profile of side effects that are dangerous because you're taking them orally, like increasing blood clots and hypertension and things like that? So how would it not make more sense if you feel you have to give some hormones to not give bioidentical hormones? Like, we would not give women who are in menopause a bunch of birth control pills. That would be considered really inappropriate. You don't give like 58-year-old women birth control pills. So why are we giving them to women with PCOS? So giving bioidentical hormones, which we would give to women, for example, if they went into premature menopause, you know, like say that happens, we call it premature ovarian insufficiency. We would give them bioidentical hormones. Of course, some people would give them birth control pills, but I prefer, you know, to give hormones that are the kind that would normally be in a female body. And when I've done this, I have helped women who otherwise just can't quite heal because they don't have the hormones to create the healing process. Because estrogen is all about healing. Like, if you have a cut on your skin, the skin actually makes estrogen. That's why old people don't heal as rapidly as young people, because they don't have as much estrogen in their skin. You know, estrogen is like the more you learn about it, it's like amazing. And men should have it as one of their favorite hormones too, because men make tons of estrogen. They don't make it from ovaries because they don't have ovaries. They make it on site. It's called paracrine when you make it in the organ that needs it. So it's not circulating. If you measure the level in the blood, it's very low, but it's made in tissue. So men make estrogen in very high amounts in their brains, in their skin, in their gut. There's plenty made in the gut. It's actually made in blood vessels. I mean, it's made all over the body, and it's just made on site. And men make it from testosterone. So this is such a simple thing. Remember I said in the ovaries, all estrogen comes from testosterone. Well, testosterone can be converted to estrogen all over the male body, and men maintain way higher levels of testosterone. So they have the capability to make estrogen on site in local tissues much better than women. But women get plenty of estrogen normally from their ovaries. After menopause, they're in trouble because they can't make up the difference in their own tissues. They have very low levels of testosterone. How can they make estrogen? What are they making it from? And then the other thing is in women with PCOS, they have more testosterone. But what happens is when they make the estrogen, if they make it at all, they make the wrong kind that actually has mostly estrone. So sometimes when they talk about PCOS and they talk about estrogen dominance, I should just mention this, it's not that they make too much estrogen from their ovary. That's the problem. They don't make enough, but they may have too much testosterone, which may be converted by their fat tissue into estrone. And the brain does not like estrone. And estrone has very different effects. Estrone is very pro-inflammatory and pro-proliferative, like in the breast tissue. So it's a total imbalance of estrogen because estrogen is a family of hormones. Remember, it's estradiol, which is the estrogen that the ovary makes. It doesn't make a ton of estrone. And so it's a different ballgame. So women and men are different. And when you hear the term estradiol, or rather estrogen dominance, now you know it's the ovaries don't make too much estrogen, but sometimes the fat tissue makes, but it's all the wrong kind. And also sometimes they don't detoxify estrogen properly because it's detoxified largely in the liver, and that's often fatty liver, and it doesn't work as well. So it's even more complex, but that's why we need to have a good functioning liver to make sure everything balances out and get rid of that excessive fat tissue so we don't make the wrong kind of estrogen that creates a totally different picture in a woman.
Wow. Awesome. I think if you're not inspired already, you need to go out and get your book. We have a copy at home.
Do you have a copy of your book there?
Handy.
Dr. Felice,
please. Just happen to have a copy right here. This is my first one. I call it the foundational book. And then the second one, which is called PCOS SOS Fertility Fast Track. So that's the program for women who are trying to get pregnant really soon. But everyone, this is like the foundation book. It has hundreds and hundreds of references, and it'll give you like a seven-step program to help you to get the health you deserve.
Oh, so love it. Beautiful. And I'm just curious. I know you're part of a very busy, thriving practice. Do you take remote patients at all? So if someone's watching this somewhere
else
in the world.
Absolutely. And I work with doctors. If someone has a doctor and they want to, you know, work as a team, I'm happy to do that. And I'm happy to give advice and go over things. What I can't do is obviously write a prescription for someone on another continent because the pharmacies would not recognize it as valid. So I can do a lot. I can't do everything, but I can do a lot. And I can make a lot of suggestions, make care plans, and just kind of review things for people, sort of act as a consultant, no matter what continent you're on.
Oh, that's so cool. And so how would they get in contact with you to book an appointment?
My website is integrativemgi.com. My group is called Integrative Medical Group of Irvine. And so the website is integrativemgi.com. And I have an office phone number. So it would be 1-949-753-7475. And anyone can make an appointment anytime. And, the website gives a lot of information. And if you forget all of that, you can Google me and find me because I think that it comes up if you just put my name in.
And I know that you've been working on your Instagram, Dr. Felice, as well.
Oh, yes.
We love your Instagram.
Lots of
nuggets of wisdom regularly. We love it. I think you offer a lot of value on your Instagram page. So definitely for those watching, if you're an Instagram user, give Dr. Felice a follow. Your handle, I believe, is dr.felicegersh.
Yes, it is. And I would love to have people come and watch my Instagrams. And if you miss them, they are on my YouTube. And I forget what that address is, but I bet we can find it.
I'm sure it will.
Google will help you. Don't worry.
Find it. I have it. It's just not in my head.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for the wonderful work you do, and particularly something that can be so confusing like this. It's so clear, one, that you're a fellow sufferer that's achieved an amazing level of healing and you've gone through that journey, and two, you're extremely bright and clearly have an affinity for studies and papers. That's your hobby. It's very clear. So thank you so much for sharing that with us again.
My pleasure. And I wish everyone the best. And anything I can do, I am here in Irvine, California, ready to help.